Kink 101 is proud to present Deviant Discussions, where kinksters come together and put the why in kink. With Diavol Diablo, Subtle Shadow, and Glass Girl, this is Deviant Discussions.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so this week I was thinking we could talk about safety during play. So like the kinds of risks that you might encounter if you're in particular kinds of play settings, and what to do if you don't feel safe. I think that is something I've definitely come across people saying before is, you know, I didn't feel safe when I was in this scene, but I didn't know how to speak up about it. I think it's something really, really valuable to be able to share, like what our thoughts are on that and what we think is the best way to say, hey, please stop. I don't want to do this. I don't feel safe. So let's start. I mean, we've got, oh gosh, I don't even know how many mitigation guides we've got online now. And there's still loads that are like in progress as well. We got things like electro play, fire play, needles, impact, bondage, guns, knives, whatever floats your boat, really. So which of those kinds of like high risk activities do you guys enjoy? And which ones do you think that you might be able to share some of that insight about?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really enjoy impact play, both from a bottom and a top perspective. And recently I've discovered that I fucking love breath play. So that's a thing. If either of you are into breath play, I would be interested to know your stories or whatever when it comes to that. But for impact play, I think probably from a bottom perspective, the most difficult obstacle to overcome is the fear that you're going to disappoint your top. That seems to be pretty common across, or at least in my experience, the bottoms that I've talked to, masochists or submissives who are maso, is that somehow by saying no or stop, they're letting their top down, or they're letting their dominant down. And I didn't fully grasp that doing that was actually the best possible thing you can do from the top perspective until I was a top. And then I was like, the play partner that I had for a while was always great about communication in that regard. And I really wish that, I would say like if she had resisted telling me that she wanted me to stop for fear of like disappointing me, that would have ruined the entire scene. Like if she hadn't told me she wanted to stop, I would, it terrifies me to think of playing with someone who's afraid to speak up, because that means in my mind that they might not be safe to play with, because I don't want to hurt, I don't want to harm anyone. You know what I mean? So I think it's difficult to, and I'm a people pleaser by nature too. Like I don't like confrontation. And I think sometimes what impact play really can force upon people like me is that you have to talk. And if you don't, it becomes a very dangerous situation for both you and the top. If you're not sure about something or you're feeling insecure about it, let your partner know before you start playing. And even if it's something you think you might enjoy and you're super into it at the beginning, but then your mind starts to change, that's why, you know, safe words are so important. Saying yellow doesn't necessarily mean that, well, saying yellow and red aren't supposed to mean the same thing as "you fucking asshole, please stop."
I think sometimes it kind of does, but you don't mean it quite as much as if you say red, maybe.
Right.
You know, because I've definitely said "you fucking asshole" before.
I have too.
But it technically means yellow. I have to wonder if sometimes it's that sense of disappointing the top or the sadist or the dominant in question is what makes them feel like they can't speak up about feeling unsafe, because I suppose there's this idea that the one that's in control of the scene should have all of those safety considerations ironed out. You know, they should be the safest person in the world while you're in that space. And we know that it's not a given. No one should feel that under pressure to ensure that absolutely nothing can go wrong, because things do go wrong. But I wonder if it's because there's this almost reliance placed upon the D type in question, that an S type thinks, I shouldn't be raising this. It's not my place to say that I don't think that this particular activity is going to be safe or whatever, because, you know, they feel like they should defer to that judgment of the D type.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for me, at least, one of the great ways that I've started to engage with partners in the beginning is to actually practice saying the safe word. So like situation might be where you're talking with somebody and like, okay, so the dominant that I play with a lot, when he first started, I don't know if I told this story on here before. I don't know if I have or not. Okay, well, you guys,
what's the story?
Yeah, I guess I should start talking and then you can tell me. The first time we played, he said that he was going to pinch my arm, and he wanted me to say yellow when it got to be too painful. And as we did that, he was like, okay. And he got into kind of like daddy dom mode. Like when I said yellow, he suddenly like got super like very positive, and like it was positive reinforcement, like a good girl, and like stroking my hair and giving me a hug. And he was like, thank you so much for saying it. Like it was really sweet. And then he was like, okay, so I'm going to pinch your arm again, and I want you to tell me when it feels like it's a red for you. And so I did that. And again, he did the same thing. And that practice, like in the beginning, I had never really had before. And just saying those words, yellow and red, out loud, made it so much easier to say them in the scene, especially with it kind of, it was almost like the practice of the safe words became part of the scene itself. It was almost like the preamble. And it was really great. And I just thought that was like the best idea ever. So I've done that with a couple of partners as well. When I've been the top, is saying, hey, let's just practice for a minute. And I did the same thing, was really positive reinforcement whenever they said it. And it gave me, from a submissive point of view, it tapped into that desire to serve and to please. And I was like, okay, so it programmed my brain to think, okay, saying the safe word isn't disappointing. He really likes it when I say it. So, you know, anyway, that's my story.
Yeah, I think it's a good practice. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that idea for sure. Now, Glass, with you, I know that there are some of the classically deemed as more risky and not quite taboo, but out there kinks of like rough body play and things like that. So like, obviously there are major risks that can be associated with things like that. And I wondered if you would be willing to share some of your experience in how you manage those risks.
Yeah, absolutely. And also like just speaking to impact play as well. I have an autoimmune condition and it affects my spine and all of my joints. And for a long time, I was afraid, you know, of impact and afraid of play, because I thought, you know, what if it causes a flare, or what if it makes me worse, or what if it, you know, damages me in a way. And so this is something really important, you know, to talk about with your dom or top or daddy, or, you know, whoever you're engaging play with, are the known limitations of your body. And, you know, kind of places to watch out for, when it comes to, you know, being hit. It's just really important to kind of know, and be able to say like, you need to avoid, you know, this joint, or this area can take more impact than another. So that's one of the things that I think about a lot when it comes to any type of play, is just my body limitations. and that my top or, you know, dominant is well informed of, because they don't want to harm me either, right? And what to watch out for. But yeah, I mean, rough body play, aside from like the emotional aspects of knowing and discussing it somewhat beforehand as to what, you know, possible triggers or things that may bother you or, you know, concerns about it. It's just really hot. what else did you want to know, Dee Dee?
It's just
really freaking hot. I mean, yes.
Yeah, I feel like that covers it quite nicely. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, obviously, if you're going for rough body play, like punching and kicking and things like that, they aren't safe activities, really. You know, I mean, a lot can go wrong with just punching someone in the wrong way. You know, you can cause a hemorrhage or anything like that. You know, shit happens. It doesn't happen very often, thankfully, but it can happen. And you got to be aware of that kind of thing. And I think there is like a lot of reluctance almost to talk about certain kinks like that, because they are met with a lot of kink shaming, and people don't understand why someone would be into that. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, the same could be said for any kink or fetish. Like, there are many that I don't understand why people are into, but they're into them and that's their thing. It doesn't mean that you don't talk about it, you know.
Yeah, for me, I love the term affectionate violence.
Yes. Like, oh God, that just makes it even hotter, doesn't it?
It does. Nice. Yeah, it's even better than consensual violence, which, you know, is basically what it is, right?
Mm-hmm. I've never heard that before. I love it.
What, affectionate violence?
Yeah, affectionate violence. Yeah.
There's something about the duality of that appeals to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just part of, like, I like playing in duality. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Especially.
Me too.
Yeah. But like I said, because of my autoimmune condition, you wouldn't think that I'd be able to take a punch, right? Or that I wouldn't be willing to. But it's being informed about the risk and knowing what you're saying yes to and what you're consenting to and what those risks are involved, and being willing to trust your partner and, you know that they'll take responsibility as much as you are for your consensual participation in something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I remember I had, going back to the affectionate violence thing, someone once said to me, like, they would only hurt me because they loved me and because it was what we both wanted. And it was so weird to actually hear someone say that. But I think, like, you have to have those conversations about the shit that can go wrong to really feel that next level of connection. Because you are handing over aspects of your life to somebody in a very, very physical sense that, you know, they have to be as aware and as mindful as you and as willing to take those risks. Like, you wouldn't hand somebody a knife to do knife play, like extreme knife play, not just sensual knife play, but extreme knife play, and not expect them to understand the gravity of what it is that you're doing together. And I think punching someone in the face is just as violent and dangerous, but also incredibly intensely affectionate, because you do have to, like, you could fuck up their face. Yeah. Are you willing to live with that? Yeah. Do you love them enough to continue, like, whatever kind of relationship you've got if you do happen to fuck up their face? Like, if you cut off a finger, it's not too bad. But if you fuck that person's face up, you've got to look at your mistake all that time. And
there's something about the face, like, even, you know, not high risk, but just face slapping itself. But, you know, taking a punch as well, of course. There's just something about it. It's kind of like a new level of, like, taboo, right? Like, it's because you're not supposed to hit people there. Like, rough body play, you know, people can hit each other wrestling or rough housing. But the level, it just seems heightened when it's, you know, kind of violence of any sort to the face.
Yeah.
But the level of intimacy, I think that takes, and the vulnerability, mm-hmm. I think it's just a really beautiful thing.
It is. It is. And it's really hard to try and explain it to someone if they don't share that opinion. Like, for the people that just don't understand and don't want to understand, they don't want to learn what it is about that kink that does it for you. I think that it gets met with even more resistance, probably because it involves the face and things like that. Like, you have people talk about cunt punching and kicking and things like that all the time, but as soon as you go to the face, I mean, it's like anything above, what is it, anything above the shoulder is classed as taboo. You're not allowed to show pictures of it on FET, for example, of punching anything higher up than the shoulder blade. Like, I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. Like, men knock 10 bells out of each other at the pub on a Friday night and no one cares. Yeah. But suddenly you put either a woman in the context, or, I mean, it might even be the same between consenting male partners that are doing rough body play, like with face punching. Is it still a taboo, or is it something that you're used to seeing down at the pub on a Friday?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird. Very strange. Very strange. But moving swiftly on. I think that covers nicely. Like, you know, I think, as you say about having acute conditions and things like that that affect the body, is something definitely to be mindful of. And I'm always surprised by how many people share stories of like the way that S&M especially has kind of helped with a lot of their conditions, because it gives them a way to control the pain.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, they know doing X, Y, or Z will cause a flare up, but they're in control of that flare up happening. You know, they know that it's going to follow. It doesn't just hit them randomly on a Tuesday morning when they're trying to get out of bed, kind of thing. And I think there's something beautiful about that as well, about being able to take ownership of that chronic kind of condition and take back the control of your body and then hand it to somebody else. It's a magical thing, I think.
It's certainly changed my relationship with pain in the positive way, for sure. And I think, I mean, some of that has to do with, like you said, like the control, but also, you know, the way that like my condition is chronic. So I have pain with it all the time. It doesn't go away. Whereas pain through, you know, BDSM and the type of play that I do does, it's passing. So it's just, it took the fact that I've always saw pain as the enemy because of the fact of dealing with it every day. And this changed that for me. It allowed me to see it in a different light.
Some of the more obvious kind of risky activities that people might be involved with. I mean, impact is obviously, you know, that there is impact happening. But then you've got things like bondage that are a little bit more of a gray area. People often don't consider them to be as high risk as they are. And yeah, you are cutting off circulation and things like that. So it is a dangerous activity. But I think sometimes I feel like bondage is one that's really often overlooked, but it's also one of the easiest to actually put those control measures of risk mitigation into place, you know, like quick release ties or having the shears and things like that is something that's just so simple. I wonder if it's one of those, like, it's almost too simple that people just overlook it, but definitely needs to be raised over and over again that bondage, you know, it is classified as edge play for good reason. You leave someone tied up for too long, there's going to be lasting damage there. Whilst it's not as obvious and in your face as, like, I don't know, playing with a gun or whatever, it is still dangerous and life altering if anything does go wrong. And I know, Shadow, you're into your bondage, so I wondered what kind of like risk mitigation you put into place.
I have a rope fetish, so I do love bondage. But I sadly haven't really gotten to engage in it much. I'm still a bit of a, well, not even a bit, I'm very much a newbie when it comes to that. But I do think some of the more useful things I have learned is have been to, for me, bondage really demands an attention to your body. And it was almost when I engaged in it for the first time on a pretty intense level, probably like last month, I'd say. And I can't remember the name of the tie, but it's where your leg is bent and then you kind of tie the rope around your thigh and your God, I cannot remember the name of that tie. I'm so bad. Anyway,
answers on a postcard.
Fukimo or something. Yeah, I want to look it up. But anyway, so but one of the things I really had to pay attention to was the tingling sensations on my toes, and also just any feelings of numbness. And I was like, that's not going to happen, whatever. Like, I was paying attention for it, but like kind of in a dubious way, like, oh, that would only happen if like he tied it wrong or something like that. But in fact, it can happen just from having my knee bent in that position for that long a period of time. Like, you really can only do it for about 25 to 30 minutes before, and that's kind of pushing it, but before you really start to be like, okay, maybe we need to untie me because my toes started tingling. Or, you know, I think, and for me, kind of a surprising thing that happened with bondage, and maybe this will just fade, was it was almost distracting for me in the scene. Like, I was so concentrated on the rope and making sure that I was okay and that he didn't need to like untie me or cut the rope immediately. And I was just so scared of hurting myself that it almost took away from the kink. And I haven't really written about it, but it might become a writing because it was almost disappointing.
And that's a shame.
I expected it to be so romantic and wonderful. Yeah. And it was really amazing in a lot of ways, but in others, I was just, and I don't want to let my guard down either, you know?
Yeah.
So finding that balance where I can be like attentive, it may have just been because it was so new. But yeah, so paying attention to your body is super important. Having shears nearby that you can grab is absolutely important. And one thing that people who are maybe more beginners might not consider is when you do something in suspension and someone needs to get out of the rope, this might not seem obvious, but please, you have to untie them to get them to the ground before you cut any of the rope.
Yeah. Don't just like slice straight across the top and let them drop.
Right. And I have heard of that, and I can totally understand how that could happen. Like, if someone's, you know, suddenly panicking because something's happening, or they're getting, you know, something is getting pinched, or they're, you know, they could be screaming in pain. Like, you're just like, oh my God, I got to get this person down as soon as possible. But that's really just going to cause more damage potentially if you do that. And that's also why a lot of people who are into bondage will say start slowly, just like with any activity, but also get used to being tied up. Because I didn't think of this. I don't think it could happen with me, but you never know, is that a lot of people will do kind of like the floor stuff and then be like, okay, yep, I'm totally ready for suspension. And something happens psychologically where it's akin to claustrophobia, and people can get panic attacks very quickly from being tied up and suspended, which is really interesting to me. I can't envision that would happen, but there's been enough cases that I've spoken to people. I know it's anecdotal, but where they thought they would be like totally fine. And when it happened, they were like, oh my God, like huge meltdown. So just things to consider.
I can fully imagine that. Definitely. Like, I don't like being picked up. I really hate being picked up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
like, I just hate it so much. And so I've always been very mindful of, and I don't know if it's the lifting or the hold in me or whatever. I've always been really mindful of that. And so I can appreciate that, like, suspension bondage is stunning to look at, especially like in its decorative forms, but I don't think I could ever do it. I don't think that I could ever be in that moment of being lifted and, you know, have trust in the ropes to hold me. the idea terrifies me genuinely. It's not a lot I'm afraid of, but that kind of thing is definitely one of them.
I absolutely love watching it. I have such an appreciation, and I think it's just so beautiful. And, mm-hmm. you know, in some of, like, you know, the videos I've seen, just the suffering is just incredible to see. It's just beautiful. Yeah. Anyways, but it's not something that interests me at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually, rope is actually, and that type of bondage is a hard limit for me.
God, aren't we all interested? I mean, there's only three of us and we have such, like, different viewpoints and perspectives and things. I love how varied we are. Like, thank God we're not into the same, like, three kinks and that's all we talk about.
True.
That would actually be really surprising, I think. I bet it's kind of hard to find two people. Well, I don't know. Two people who are into the exact same things. Well, I don't know, though.
Do you never get any of those messages where they're like, hey, I'm into the same things you are? And I'm like, uh-huh, I don't believe that. Like, I really don't believe that.
Yeah. Well, people, like, never read those profiles or look at anything.
Mate, I will put money on it that there is something on there that you are not into. But yeah.
Yep.
See, for me, a lot of the like the high risk kinks that I'm into are more of your, you know, skin breaking ones. And I think that those are, they're obvious kinks to have guides about, I think. Things like, you know, knife play outside of sensual where it's not breaking the skin, gun play, needle play, fire play. Oh my God, just all my happy places. But then you've got things like cell popping, which is one that is an upcoming risk mitigation guide that we're going to be writing about. And it was so strange. Like, I've spoken about my, I haven't got the experience of being cell popped. Is that the verb? I don't know. But like the smell and things like that. But it's something that you just don't think about unless you're in that situation. And you know, you're kind of confronted with this kinky activity. And then you think, Jesus, I wonder what actually has to go into planning something like that. Like,
what is it?
What, cell popping? It's the thing that made me think someone was cooking chicken wings.
So it's like cooking the skin.
Basically, it just smells like chicken wings. That's the only thing I can describe
it as. That's so disgusting, Dee Dee. Like,
well, I mean, so it's thought, kind of.
I mean, the thought, I don't mean that in a kink shaming way. I mean, the thought of. I'm talking about the chicken wing smell. Like, oh, someone's skin is burning. I'm hungry.
I was hungry, okay? Leave me alone. I tell you what, no one wants to crash in the Alps with me. Like, I am going to be the first one.
Dee Dee is on it. And then when she's done, she'll make a human skin flogger. Yes.
What is the risk mitigation for cannibalism, Dee Dee?
I mean, I actually had like a really good answer straight away there, but if I said it too quickly, people would think I'd thought about it. But no, you know, I guess communicable diseases, that kind of thing, the same sort of thing as like E. coli, you know,
surely,
raw meat.
Go slowly, you know.
Go slowly. I don't know that they'd want you to go slowly. I think, you know, swallow the whole leg in one. Down in one. Yeah, now make sure that you prep your surfaces and ensure the meat's cooked thoroughly and, you know.
Actually, I learned today that I was doing some SEO kind of research for our site and came across a new word that I didn't know. I saw a word phrase, like, because I was researching search key phrases for people who are looking for fetish and kink, and it was vor fetish, like V as in Victor, O-R-E, which is actually cannibalism. Yeah.
I think we have it on the Kinklopedia, vorophilia.
Yeah.
We actually got quite a few hits on it. There was like a spate where we had quite a few hits on vorophilia and a couple of the other like really out there fetishes. And I was like, oh boy, someone's been busy this week.
Yeah. All work and no play.
It was in the news a lot. I think it was in the spring, maybe.
Oh, really?
Spring or summer, because there's an actor who was
Shit! Yeah, there was Armie Hammer.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was. I remember bringing this up on one of the previous podcasts about it, and like he just got such a bad rep. Bless him. I feel bad because it's one of those kind of Me Too stories that everyone's now jumped on and said, oh yeah, he said this to me, he said this to me, he said this to me. And no doubt about it, they're probably telling the truth, but I think that they've timed coming forward very, very poorly. Because, you know, if you were concerned about that kind of thing, speak up about it at the time, not like years down the line when this person's famous and, you know, it calls your ethics into question. But yeah, he was in the news. I haven't seen anything about that for a really long time. But yeah, vorophilia is a real thing. I don't personally have it. Honestly, I don't. I might know how to cook a person, but I don't want to.
That's probably for the best, and is probably one of those kinks or fetishes that
you only get to enjoy it once.
Or, you know, well, I mean, I have a vampire fetish, but, you know, I'm not gonna like go find a vampire.
So, well, let me know if you
it's
do.
Kind of,
yeah. If you do, could you let us
realm
know?
Of my imagination? Yeah. So I think
like,
some
tell us where they are.
Yeah, there's no thinking crimes, you know, like people, no thought crimes. People can be into vore as long as they don't. Well, I suppose if somebody wants to be eaten in that way.
Yeah, but does it not kind of come down to the old, you can't consent to being assaulted? Can you really consent to being eaten? Because, like, once they've swallowed you down, you can't.
Kind of being eaten.
Hold on,
no, that's
though.
What I was
oh
saying.
Oh, my God. Like, what if you ate someone and then you started, like, being sick? Is that the person withdrawing consent from inside and making you vomit them back up again?
Okay, so did he.
That'd be kind of cool, though. Like,
it would be a very interesting horror movie, though.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
If there are any screenwriters listening, you can
so
have that one
topic.
For free.
Yeah. Jesus.
Anyway, so oh my god, I don't even know what risk mitigation or something. What were we talking about? I don't even know
we
anymore.
Got into, you were talking about you got excited talking about cooking and the cell popping.
Cell popping. The chicken
right.
wings.
Okay.
That was
so
it.
So forget about the cannibalism thing. Let's go back to DD talking about cooking skin.
I wasn't the person cooking the skin. I was just hungry and I thought I could smell chicken wings.
Look, you're not helping yourself, Dee Dee.
I know, honestly. Like, one day someone is just going to get a t-shirt made with, like, Dee Dee smells chicken wings. Or maybe we should sell that.
Oh, there you go.
But anyway, so cell popping, yes, that was one of them. And then things like that I didn't even really... I was as guilty as anybody of not considering the risks around, you know, like water sports and having to actually find out about the risks of water sports. When you sit down and write them down, it's like, well, yeah, it's kind of like, duh. But the same with like scat and stuff. I mean, they're not my kinks, but writing from a, you know, completely objective perspective about what the risks were, I was like, Jesus, this is really stuff that I wouldn't have thought about had I not had to write this article. But it makes me appreciate that when someone is first starting to explore and they get that little bit of, you know, like, even if it's just a fetish kind of frenzy, they overlook what those steps are that they need to be mindful of. And it is easy to not think just because something's not your kink, it doesn't mean that you're never going to be in a situation where you have to appreciate the risks of it. And it's definitely made me more mindful of, you know, be ready for someone to spring something on you that you haven't thought of before. And the good thing with risk mitigation is a lot of it is kind of transferable. You know, if you've got any kind of kink that breaks the skin, any of your kind of blood play risk mitigations can tie into that nicely. You know, if you've got needle play, for example, having a clean side and a dirty side is something that can be applied to any kind of blood play. If you're going to be piercing or you know, doing scarification or whatever. And then with like fire play, having a spotter, I think that's almost becoming a real thing for me, that if I was ever doing any kind of scene, I think I'd feel more confident if I did have a spotter there, because you do get caught up in the moment. And like you said, Shadow, about your experience with bondage recently, maybe if you'd had the spotter there, that could have taken away from the external things that you had to be mindful of, and you only had to think about, right, if I start getting pins and needles or I start tingling, that's the only thing I need to be worried about. You might have been able to enjoy that experience more, knowing that somebody else was looking out for the external well-being side of things.
Maybe.
But then again, you know, it comes down to, do you really want someone to be there when you're having a kinky fun time?
Exactly. I'm not a huge exhibitionist when I'm bottoming, but if I was the top, I would be fine with it. Which is interesting to me, but yeah.
I think like risk mitigation, even, you know, when we take it down to basics, like just the risk of exchanging bodily fluids, you know, are you fluid bonded, safe sex? I think about like menstrual blood, like those types of things, you know.
And like a really obvious one as well, pregnancy. Like I think that a lot of people are under this assumption that kinky sex can't get you pregnant. And it can, like it really can. But yeah, like you only need to look at the kind of things that people Google, where they're like,
sex won't get you pregnant. I'm sorry. Can we like back up a minute? What? Like penetrative sex?
I know, right? Who knew?
With a vagina that and a penis and sperm and ovaries.
These are all very sexy words. I'm so glad that you're saying them.
Well, I don't understand the question.
Well, no, but it's when you look at like the things that people Google or like you know, the writing that we have about like what sex ed didn't teach you and stuff, like the fact that people are asking those questions, those are key risks of any kind of sexual activity or even, well, in some cases, not even getting to like the end plate of sex, but they are still things to be mindful of. So, you know, things like STIs and STDs, they don't just come from someone putting their penis in you. You know, you can transfer that on sex toys, which isn't a risky activity in and of itself. But if you don't know where those sex toys have been, or you don't know that they've been cleaned thoroughly or anything like that, you don't know if they're being used on multiple partners besides you. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. A whole manner of things can start going wrong.
Yeah, especially one thing, or at least if just briefly, like if we want to talk about like risks associated with, let's say you were really into this guy and he had like HSV or HPV and had the genital warts, like he was breakout. Or whatever, and you were like, while this is going on, I can just give him a hand job or whatever. So you do that, and then you touch yourself without washing your hand. You just transmitted it to yourself.
Yeah.
People don't know that.
I think so that's why our like, you know, STI and STD infographics and the risk mitigation guides, they're there for good reason. And I hope
there's so much information. Yeah.
People continue to go and look at them. I mean, we've had requests for different ones and everything that I think it's admirable that people are coming forward and saying, hey, I don't know enough about this. Please, will you give me some more information in one place that I can look it up? And that's what Kink 101 aimed to be, was a one-stop source for people to find that kind of information. So I think this has been a really good topic to discuss. And I think there's so much to it that we could probably do another episode at least out of it. Yeah. So maybe that's one for season 4 if people want to stay tuned. But thanks, guys. I always appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you'd like to know more about kink and BDSM, or if you have your own adventure to share, please visit kink101.com. That's kynk101.com. Because we put the Y in kink.